You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, September 28th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Republicans block debt ceiling hike. Meanwhile, Democrats to offer a clean continuing resolution and pass the debt ceiling somehow on their own. Meanwhile, on the infrastructure side of things, Pelosi tries to bulldoze progressives. Kyrsten Sinema is hosting a corporate fundraiser for opponents of Biden's said infrastructure plans. Meanwhile, the Biden administration publishes a new rule which should permanently protect at least some dreamers. Sherrod Brown to introduce legislation barring Fed members from trading securities in the wake of two resignations of Fed members for shady trading. Pfizer submits data looking for approval for kids 5 to 11 to get shots. Could happen by Halloween. New York City teachers vaccine mandate moves forward now. While New York State is looking to fill gaps in their medical personnel for folks who refuse the vaccination with the National Guard. Senate and House Armed Services committees are hearing testimony on the Afghanistan pullout. And lastly, John Hinckley Jr., Ronald Reagan's would-be assassin, to be freed in June. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Tuesday. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Sam.
It is Tuesday. This is a crazy week for all the legislation. And just, you know, before we get into all this stuff today.
All the legislation, all the stuff.
All the stuff. I can't help but think that when the Republicans were in this situation in 2017, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer walked into Donald Trump's office and said, "Don't worry, we're going to clear the decks of all of this, half this stuff for you." And I think they thought they were going to get something. They were convinced they were going to sweet talk Donald Trump.
The guy who notoriously backs out of contracts and screws people over in real estate deals. Yeah,
yes.
We're kind of just in good faith, get something out of him.
Exactly. And what they did do is midwife the Trump tax cuts and make it much easier to pass those because much easier when you don't have to navigate 14 different things at any given time. But speaking of Donald Trump, let us turn our attention first today to an amazing statistic that apparently came from Charles Gaba, who has a Substack and is a doctor. I think he's a doctor. He writes about medical stuff. And then it was written in the New York Times. And it really is just stunning data about the difference of COVID in red states versus blue states. Do we have this, put up this graphic here? This is really stunning stuff.
Yeah, this went a little bit viral yesterday just because of how clear that is. That's from July 1st to September 23rd.
When Delta becomes the prominent form of COVID in the country. At the beginning of COVID, blue states tended to have more COVID. because there was no vaccine that existed. And it hit
New York first, and notoriously.
It hit New York first, and people were less prepared. And
population densities.
But then with Delta, by the time Delta rolls around, we start to see divergences in vaccinations. There were initially, during the early months of the vaccinations, demographic groups that lagged in receiving vaccination shots. Black Americans, Latino Americans, and Republican voters were sort of the three big cohorts. The gaps between Black Americans, Latino Americans, indigenous people have shrunk dramatically in terms of white people, broadly speaking. But the partisan gap is pretty massive. A Pew poll last month found that 86% of Democratic voters had received at least one shot, compared with 60% of Republican voters. The political divide, this is according to David Leonhardt in the New York Times, the political divide over vaccination is so large that almost every reliable blue state now has a higher vaccination rate than almost every reliable red state. But it gets worse than that. COVID deaths are now showing a similar pattern.
Well, that's what we're seeing also, and represented a little by that graph.
That graph. Put that back on. Put that graph back up for a second. And this is deaths per 100,000 residents. Since Delta began circulating widely, in counties where Donald Trump received at least 70% of the vote, super red counties, the virus has killed 47 out of every 100,000 people since the end of June. In counties where Trump has won less than 32% of the vote, it's more or less the flip of that, where Biden won 68% of the vote, the number is 10 out of 100,000. In other words, there's 4.7 times more higher rate of death per 100,000 as a function of people voting for Donald Trump there. In other words, it shows you two things. One, the vaccines work in terms of diminishing deaths. And two, a really enthusiastic Trump voting county, say also a Republican voting county, I guess, they're not getting vaccines, and they're not, and I would imagine it's not just the vaccines. It's also a function of just how seriously they take COVID, because
the more vaccinated counties are more likely to also have mask and other mitigation
and just different practices,
and
right?
Different practices. So it, you can't draw it 100% of the vaccine, but it's a large proportion of what we're seeing.
Without a doubt. And in fact, on the program yesterday, we had someone call in who was who said he was taking COVID very seriously, but was vaccine hesitant and ended up getting COVID. It was a crazy story. And he sent us an email. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. Just one more thing to give you a sense of what's going on with this stuff. This is according again to David Leonhardt in an article this month for Breitbart. John Nolte, who I guess is one of the editors there, writers, argued that the partisan gap in vaccination rates was part of a liberal plot.
Ah!
Now
they finally are onto it.
Yes.
Now how did the libs do this?
We hid it for so long.
Liberals like Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and Anthony Fauci, and of course Howard Stern, had tried so hard to persuade people to get vaccinated because they knew if they were very vigorous in their promotion of the vaccine, Republicans would do the opposite of what they said.
Well, I mean, we can't underestimate the Republicans' resentment of liberals, and thus we always, you know, we're trying to kill them by advocating for them to save their own lives.
Well, we almost made conservatives
classic
extinct.
Move.
We almost made conservatives extinct in the 19th century when we all said, "Don't go jump off that cliff," and they almost all did.
You know, as absurd as that sounds, I've mentioned before I was on a panel with the former EPA head, former governor of New Jersey, Christine Todd Whitman. And she made the argument that part of the reason why conservatives deny climate change was because liberals were so convinced that it was real.
It's 100% what it is. We can't underestimate how much resentment of liberal culture is like the one of the dominant factors in some of these decisions. I've had these conversations with conservatives. I'm talking about child tax credit, climate change, Medicare for all, whatever it is. It's all cultural resentment in terms of what's at the top.
It's not even cultural resentment. I mean, it's this is the foundation of the conservative intellectual movement. It is simply like we do the opposite.
Also, like, look what you made me do.
Exactly.
Yes. Right. Which is, by the way, what abusers say after they hit their significant others, you know.
Well, in this instance,
smack himself in the face.
The abusers
this way.
The abusers and the abused are the same when it comes to COVID. And
they're swinging at the liberals, but then.
Right. It's swinging around and smacking
back
them in
into the face.
Operation Baba Booey.
I love the fact that Howard Stern is in on this.
Get him in the control room.
Exactly.
Yes, he was also a part of the plot to kill Prince.
I did not know that.
It's a popular Q theory, the Clintons.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, let's turn our attention to what's happening on the Hill today. Mark Milley, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, we're testifying both in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee and I think this afternoon the House Armed Services Committee. Largely, they are being questioned on the Afghanistan pullout, which in the final analysis, over 120,000 people were evacuated and we ended a 20-year-long war there. Net positive. And there are definitely areas of the country that are now sliding backwards in terms of progress that was made with women and other, I guess, Western values, as it were. But for the vast majority of the country, they just wanted their wars to end so that they could actually live. Period. Never mind live certain values. And some of them may have had resentment towards these Western values. But the bottom line is that imposing these on a country at the cost of the lives of many of their countrymen turned out to be something they did not want. Here is Mark Milley testifying in front of Senator Tom Cotton, who is really mad. Mm. That we ended this war.
It's definitely not performative, too, this part. Definitely not.
Always performative, yeah. But this is what he's performing.
Just got one final question. General Milley, I can only conclude that your advice about staying in Afghanistan was rejected. I'm shocked to learn that your advice wasn't sought until August 25th on staying past the August 31 deadline. I understand that you're the principal military advisor, that you advise, you don't decide, the president decides. But if all this is true, General Milley, why haven't you resigned?
Senator, as a senior military officer, resigning is a really serious thing. It's a political act if I'm resigning in protest. My job is to provide advice. My statutory responsibility is to provide legal advice or best military advice to the president. And that's my legal requirement. That's what the law is. The president doesn't have to agree with that advice. He doesn't have to make those decisions just because we're generals. And it would be an incredible act of political defiance for a commissioned officer to just resign because my advice is not taken. This country doesn't want generals figuring out what orders we are going to accept and do or not. That's not our job. The principle of civilian control of the military is absolute. It's critical to this republic. In addition to that, just from a personal standpoint, you know, my dad didn't get a choice to resign at Iwo Jima. And those kids that are at Abbey Gate, they don't get a choice to resign. And I'm not going to turn my back on them. I'm not going to resign. They can't resign, so I'm not going to resign. There's no way. If the orders are illegal, we're in a different place. But if the orders are legal from civilian authority, I intend to carry them out.
Thank you, Senator Cotton.
Now, I appreciated every single thing that Millie had to say, and it was fun to watch Tom Cotton be put in his place over an issue like that. I do think, though, that if the reporting on what Mark Milley did during the end of the Trump administration, though I may be glad he did it, he should resign for that very principle. I mean, and this is a really important distinction I think that people need to make. I can support Mark Milley stopping a lunatic in the White House from starting World War III. But once that threat is over, he's got to resign so that he can maintain the principle he just mentioned. Like, you know, like we hear all these scenarios about, you know, what if the president knew that there was a nuclear weapon in a down a well and they had to torture somebody and et cetera, et cetera.
People watch 24 and then have nightmares.
Yeah, exactly.
And play out those scenarios in real life.
Shouldn't torture be legal because of that? No, if the president's in that position and he thinks that torturing is going to save the lives of millions of Americans, the president makes a decision to torture, very much appreciated, and then after the threat is gone, you resign because you want to maintain the value of that principle. We cannot have military leadership usurp civilian leadership. And if military commanders feel it's necessary in the moment to do it, thank you. Now resign. Maybe then they still get their pension. Maybe they don't go to prison, depending on the situation. But you resign because you say, I was put into a situation where I had to defy my core brand proposition, my fundamental orders, yes, or whatnot it is. So,
and it's also just, I mean, that principle is so important because Matt's pointed this out a few times, like the propensity of the media to talk about the military as separate from the dirty, grimy elements of politics and just looking out for American interests internationally and at home. That's why they love Mark Milley, too, because he's somebody in uniform who can say those things and also dunk on Donald Trump. But the sugar high of those, that usefulness is a bit scarier when applied to the broader principle that you're talking about here.
Right. And I love how Tom Cotton, it's probably the first time he speaks about the president without saying the words commander in chief.
Yeah. And saluting.
Exactly.
And then crying red, white, and blue tears. Although I don't know if he's capable of crying.
But there it is. Yeah, I know. There's Milley. And I appreciate what he had to say there. If what was reported about what he did during Trump administration, he probably should have resigned after that fact. And that would have been
not enough resignations and protests.
Oh, my gosh. No, it would be nice to have that tradition. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the debt ceiling, the continuing resolution so that our government doesn't shut down, the bipartisan framework for the infrastructure bill, and the reconciliation bill, and how Nancy Pelosi has announced that she is chucking the deal that she made with, her whole caucus. And we will find out what the progressives are going to do about it. We'll be right back after this. And the this that I'm referring to, of course, are today's sponsors. I still haven't shaved. I still haven't shaved. It's Tuesday. Generally, I like to shave on Sundays, and that carries me, you know, theoretically to Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I let it slide to Friday. This week, I got a little back-footed, and so went to the zoo with Saul, and I got to... But going to shave probably tonight or tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning, get people excited. And you're going to be able to look forward to it with...
my Harry's razor.
There you go.
And if you don't know Harry's, it is time you do. Harry's was created to be a different from other shaving companies. Why? Or how, I should say. Harry's crafts high-quality, long-lasting blades. They are durable, weighted handles that make for a close, comfortable shave, quick and enjoyable. And since Harry's insists you shouldn't have to choose between a great shave and basically mortgaging your home, of to go into the, you know, pharmacy and get one of those sort of razor blade handles that are like ensconced in like an ice fortress. And they charge you an arm and leg. No, Harry's gives you a great shave at a fair price. Refills start as low as $2. And new Harry customers get their starter set. Check it out. 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover. $13 value for $3. Harry's also offers a wide range of amazing face and body care products for men, all delivered right to your door. Makes it easy peasy. Check it out. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. You can go to harrys.com/majority. You get their starter set for just $3. It's 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you got nothing to lose. Go to harrys.com/majority right now and get this special offer. That's Harry's, harrys.com/majority. Folks, got a small business. Maybe your kid is selling a bunch of stuff on Depop. Well, you want to save some time? Maybe you don't want to go to the post office. Hmm. If you're like me, maybe you don't even want to leave your house or your office at any given time. Well,
except stamps, to go to and from.
Except for to go to and from. Exactly. If there was a tunnel between here and my house.
You hear that, Elon?
Yep, there you go. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. Doesn't matter if you're an office sending invoices, whether you got like an Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse that's shipping out orders, Stamps.com is going to make your life much, much easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer. You'll get exclusive discounts on postage and shipping from the U.S. Postal Service and UPS. Once your mail is ready, you just schedule a pickup or you drop it off. Plus, with Stamps.com new rate advisor tool, you can compare shipping rates and timelines to find out what is your best option. Save time and money with Stamps.com. There's no risk. And with my promo code, MajorityReport, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. There is no long-term commitments, no contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in MajorityReport. That's Stamps.com, promo code MajorityReport. Stamps.com, never leave your office or home again, unless you want to. Hmm. You can post this 24/7 with that. 24/7, 365. You want it at 2 a.m.? Boom. Just go print it out.
I'll do it at 2 a.m.
I mean, I was up last night at 2 a.m., and if I had something to mail, I would have done it. Lastly, I have taken some big steps in sort of like stripping stuff out of my apartment and putting in only furniture that is nice. Just at that point where my kid's not going to destroy it. Your home should show off what makes you, you. Joybird offers modern, customizable furniture for every space available in a variety of vibrant and durable fabric options. Summer's winding down. Joybird has all the modern outdoor furniture and accessories you need to make the most of your patio hangs. You can choose from over 18,000 customization options, or you browse curated collections to find the perfect piece for your style. Joybird's design specialists are standing by to make your vision a reality for free. Joybird is committed to creating quality furniture and a more sustainable future. Their pieces are made using responsibly sourced materials, and they are free of harmful chemicals.
And I love the aesthetic, really. I've been eyeing it and have it on my bookmarks.
Well, they happen to have a showroom
I've walked through two blocks from here.
Blocks and blocks from here.
Right.
Blocks and blocks. Very far away from us.
Yep.
Anyways.
On the other side of the country.
Yep. Through partnerships with groups like One Tree Planted, Joybird is helping conservation efforts. Joybird, like I said, you get quality craftsmanship, you get stain and scratch resistant fabrics, and a limited lifetime warranty. Joybird stands by its quality. They have a 90-day return policy. If it is not everything you hope for, you send it back. It's time, folks. Get some furniture that you like. And if you don't like it, you got 90 days to send it back. I don't know what that is, but my computer was just like really, really took off when I said that. Look, you create a space that brings you joy with Joybird. Visit joybird.com/majority and get 30% off your purchase. That's 30% off, 30% off at joybird.com/majority. Wowza. I don't know what that was.
I see you, Francesca.
There you go.
In that like Joybird coach.
Yep. All right.
It's a Peloton ad or something like that, right?
I don't know. All right. We are back, and let's get into what we have happening over the past 24 hours and looking forward to the next 24-48. We start with the last night. The Democrats attempted to vote on a bill that would have done two things. It contained the continuing resolution. In other words, we don't have a budget at the moment, or we're about to run out of our fiscal year budget. And when you don't have one, the government shuts down because nobody knows what's going to get paid for. There's some things that continue to run essentially like on life support, but there's a government shutdown. The budget is not ready to pass yet. It is part of the reconciliation bill. And they do these continuing resolutions. It was combined with the debt ceiling hike. The debt ceiling hike is this, I don't know what else to say. It is a stupid mechanism in which the government and the legislature spend money, and then they basically pay for the money that they spend, in this instance, by borrowing. And this is something that could be eliminated totally, could be suspended permanently. And they may, in fact, do that. But
it's there like for when the opposition party is in power in order to basically say, see, you're being fiscally irresponsible.
That's right.
And then every year we're going to remind you of it. And so that's the function it serves. No one does that better than Mitch McConnell.
Yes. And the thing is, though, I don't know that anybody cares.
The Republicans raised the debt ceiling by trillions during their time. And right. Nobody like the wheel turns on. Politically, it has no use.
And like we said, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi were like, we'll take care of that for you last time when Donald Trump was president. Mitch McConnell filibustered. The Republicans filibustered the bill. So now it needs to be split up. The government shutdown bill is going to be brought to the floor. It's going to be a clean version of that bill. And then the Democrats need to figure out how to do the debt ceiling hike. There's one thing that you could do. The Treasury has the constitutional authority to mint coins of any value. So Congress could simply pass a bill that says Treasury can mint a platinum coin worth trillions of dollars. The Treasury mints that coin and then deposit it in the U.S. bank account.
Yes.
Essentially. And
hashtag mint the coin.
Bingo bango. It is done.
These are just all mechanisms that are very easy and logical when you lay them out, but for Washington, they sound insurmountable.
Yeah, I would say make a $10 trillion coin and put Donald Trump's face on it.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
But then we'll finally get the Trump coin.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is that they do not want... I think that there is a fear amongst the... of both parties. The establishment, the elite, whatever you want to call it. That if we reveal to the American public... that because we have a sovereign currency, because we have the most used currency in the world, that we can actually forgive our own debt. Some debt is held by other countries. We don't need to even issue debt to spend. We literally create money. We have a fiat system. It is tied to nothing.
Yeah.
The only constraint is if too much money is printed and gets circulated, that it can be greater, the amount of money that we have can be greater than our economy's capacity to provide products and services that money commands.
And something tells me the United States doesn't have a problem in producing.
We certainly don't have that. We certainly don't have that. We could theoretically, and there's a solution for that. That is to claw some of the money back through something we call taxation.
Right.
And so, and frankly, if you pay your taxes in dollars as it stands now, do you know what we do with that? We burn that money.
Right.
And then we just make new money. So we could do that. But I think there is a fear. Because if that's the case, then you cannot have these kabuki theaters that we're having about the $3.5 trillion infrastructure
bill. When you make everything seem finite, you're able to heighten the stakes of these conversations for partisan ends.
Without a doubt. Very well said. That's exactly what's going on. And that and part of it is because you don't want to provide too much services to people because maybe they decide, hey, I don't want to work at your crappy job.
Yeah, there was some piece in these times about how the expansion of unemployment benefits, I mean, it liberated a lot of people. And there's people terrified in government because there needs to be a certain amount of insecurity, as has been said.
Alan Greenspan, I think, testified in front of Congress saying, I can't remember, this was about 30, 40 years ago, part of our job is to create a slight insecurity amongst the workforce.
AKA so that hunger and suffering in order to maintain.
That's the historical inheritance of the elite. You have to maintain that coercion.
And greater empowerment of people in terms of what they can do with their government is highly problematic. We have Kristen Sinema now meeting with her contributors, I think probably maybe at this moment, corporate contributors who are against the Biden infrastructure bill. We have the dentists lobby. We're lobbying against the expansion of Medicare for dental services. Here is a quote from Joe Manchin. There are good people that I represent, and we're just concerned about entitlement mentality versus rewarding mentality. I know that sounded awkward because I don't know what a rewarding mentality is, but about entitlement mentality, like you expect something because you're human versus you get a reward. Here's a cookie.
Maybe the rewarding mentality is that, like, the bosses are afraid that they're going to actually have to do something nice for their workers. Or is that what it is?
I think it's something like there'll be pie in the sky when you die.
Exactly. And then taking care of those who really can't take care of themselves. That's all. But there's so much good stuff in there that we're still working diligently. He's talking about the infrastructure bill. Now, if you'll recall, when the infrastructure bills were first introduced, Joe Biden had basically a broad proposal for about $4 to $5 trillion worth of infrastructure spending in two different tranches. Mm. Roughly $2.5 trillion for more physical infrastructure, $2.5 trillion for more social infrastructure. And he invited the Republicans to come down, negotiate with him. They, of course, had no interest. Kyrsten Sinema and was it Rob Portman convened a bipartisan gang, terrified of much of the social spending and the Green New Deal type of stuff and the support for like electric vehicles or, you know, or the idea of expansion, you know, negotiating drug prices, all the things that the American public wants. Very hard to come out against directly. Much better to start talking about vague things like spending and rewarding mentality versus entitlement mentality, whatever the F that means, from a guy who, incidentally, his daughter got a fake degree from when he was governor of West Virginia, a fake business degree from the West Virginia University.
Was it a rewarding mentality when they had the West Virginia administrators try to make up those credits to cover for her? That's a rewarding mentality.
That was not an entitlement mentality. I mean, it was probably the third mentality, maybe.
I mean, it would be a rewarding mentality, but what are you rewarding her for outside of her parentage?
Rewarding her a free degree for being Manchin's daughter.
Yeah, she got the genetic lottery, or maybe not that in that way.
So this is what's going on, and the idea was, at the time the deal was made, we will not pass the skinny infrastructure bill, which has about half a trillion dollars worth of actual new spending. The other half a trillion dollars is sort of the perennial funding of infrastructure that happens. We will not pass that before we pass the reconciliation bill, the bigger $3.5 trillion package, because the way that conservative and moderate Democrats would sink the big bill is by passing the small one and say, you know what, we have had enough. So you needed to join these together, and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer pledged that that was the case. They pledged that that was the case. And yet, today, I should say last night, Nancy Pelosi announces we're going ahead with the skinny bill, and we're going to pass it on Thursday. And the question is, will progressives say, guess what, we're not going to vote? Nancy Pelosi has a 3-vote margin in the House. At least 4 Republicans have said they will vote for that. So that's a 7-vote margin she has. At least 22, by the count of the American Prospect and the Daily Poster and the Intercept, I think it is, 23. Progressives have announced they will vote against that bill. Pramila Jayapal says that number may be higher. Here she was on
Rachel Maddow's show
last night.
And right now, if the plan is still to do infrastructure, the infrastructure vote on Thursday, it sounds like the plan from you and the Progressive Caucus is still to vote that down unless there has been significant progress toward the Build Back Better bill, the reconciliation bill. It sounds like Thursday might still be more on the bubble than the headlines would make you believe.
I think that's right. Look, I think these are arbitrary dates. I think today was an arbitrary date that was set by a small group of people. I think what's important is, do we want to deliver on the Democratic agenda and the president's agenda? Negotiations are happening. I think I don't think the speaker will bring the vote to the floor if she doesn't have the votes. And I think she is very clear that without the reconciliation bill voted on, we are going to have, it can't be a pinky promise, right, Rachel? It's got to be an actual bill that is written, the legislative text is written, the numbers are agreed to, everything is agreed to in order for us to be able to vote for the bipartisan bill. And I think she's really clear on that. So we're going to do everything we can. I've been having conversations over the weekend. Every single minute of every single day is taken up with this. And those conversations are really good. They're very productive. And I believe that we will continue to work. And let's see if we can get it done by Thursday. Great. I've always been surprised at what happens here in the last 24, 48, 72 hours when there's a deadline. But if we can't, then we'll keep working and we'll get it done as soon as we can.
That is her way of saying, we're not going to vote for this. And yeah. we are also not going to accept like some broad framework that it's going to happen. Maybe, you know, here's a hamburger on Tuesday type of situation. Now, Pelosi is claiming that they have joined the skinny infrastructure bill with the Surface Transportation Authority, which provides a lot of the other spending that's happening there. She claims that that bill, which that Surface Transportation Authority will run out as of Thursday, the 30th.
Which is the deadline, the second deadline for this.
For the infrastructure bill. She can separate that out.
She can. And it's been done since 2003, according to the American Prospect, 23 times.
So 23 times feels like a lot of times during that time. And so she certainly can.
28 short-term extensions of the surface transportation authorization since 2003.
Yeah. And so that can happen. And everybody knows it. And so this is going to be a big standoff. It's going to be interesting to see. She generally does not bring bills up to the floor unless she thinks she has the votes. And she's never been wrong. But maybe she brings the votes to the floor. In that case, the progressives have to vote it down. And then she turns to the moderates, supposed. It's really, let's be honest, they're just corporatists. And says, are you really going to vote against the infrastructure bill when it comes back up in X amount of days?
And that's an optimistic view of what would happen if progressives vote it down and she actually brings it to the floor. That would be a blame progressives party.
It certainly would be. But let's be clear. By bringing that vote to the floor, Schumer and Pelosi have lied to their caucus. They have broken the deal. The deal is off.
Right. And the reason that that deal was even in place was because these corporate senators and representatives wanted to lock progressives out of the bipartisan infrastructure negotiation process, which they successfully did. And now they want their input met and potentially even want to sink, which is really their plan all along, the bigger package that progressives and a majority of the Democratic caucus negotiated and that the Biden administration wrapped his entire agenda into. So they wanted to lock the left out of this bipartisan negotiation with Republicans. And now they want to double back and say, wait, we want to hamstring and maybe kill your half of the deal, even though we are the majority party in the Senate and in the House, and we have the presidency. We're going to tank a majority of the agenda because we really only wanted to do one thing, which is make a deal with Republicans. And just like to talk a little bit more about this transportation reauthorization, if it expires, there is the potential for a lot of furloughs of workers. And this is yet another disingenuous tactic by Pelosi and Democratic leadership, frankly, where they're able to leverage, or they try to leverage, progressives' humanity against them, because furloughs for these transportation workers, nobody wants that. But Pelosi's willing to go there and dangle that, at least on the surface, in order to kind of play a little bit more hardball and bring these two sides together. But one side is always asked to make massive concessions and the other is not.
Right. And I will say that there are, I am certainly not allergic to the concept of take a half a sandwich. Don't reject a half a sandwich because you're not getting a whole sandwich. But there are times where you have to reject a half a sandwich. In this instance, it's really closer to like an eighth of a sandwich. And that's it. Everyone knows the broader infrastructure bill is DOA if the bipartisan framework passes. As it stands now, you're already seeing Pelosi say that this number is going to be lower. And you're already seeing means testing for a lot of these programs. And means testing, let's be clear, is the most inefficient way to deliver services. If you are concerned, whether it's free community college, whether it's free college, whether it's expanded Medicare, whether it's daycare, or free preschool. If you are concerned about billionaires accessing that stuff, well, if you're concerned about that, then I got some news. You're a little bit off your mind.
Yeah.
But if you're concerned about even people who make over $400,000, people who make over $200,000, people who make over $100,000, if you're concerned about wealthy people getting benefits from the government, instead of creating an apparatus that needs to be built, that needs to be operated to means test all of these different things, there is the most effective, simple mechanism that we have already developed in this country to make sure that people of means, wealthy people, the rich, are not getting government services when they don't need them. And that is called taxation. You tax them more.
What?
Yes, I know this is shocking, but the fact of the matter is, if you want to save money and you want to make sure that there is equitable distribution of government programs and benefits, and you don't want people who you think don't need it to get those benefits, you increase taxes. That is the way. Every other mechanism is both inefficient and just simply a way of obscuring those benefits for people. Period. End of story.
Right. But unfortunately for us, Sinema, as she's fundraising with a variety of interest groups today, I believe five separate ones who oppose the reconciliation bill, she has signaled that she is not in favor of raising the corporate tax rate from 21% or increasing the top marginal tax rate for the highest earners in this country. So, you know, look at that. We have somebody who to kill any kind of marginal, tiny tax increase in the party that's supposed to be in favor of taxing the rich.
And we should say that the Arizona Democratic Party is set to have a vote of no confidence on Kyrsten Sinema. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that, at least amongst Democrats. I think you see that occasionally. Republicans have Republican state parties have voted no confidence against some of the Republican lawmakers who may have voted for impeachment of Donald Trump.
Right.
But you don't see this with a sitting senator from the Democrats. And I don't know if there's a what the line is on trade sports, but if or any other gambling platform, I don't even know if that still exists. But if you could short Kyrsten Sinema's career as a senator,
mm-hmm,
in some way, that I would do. Because unless she gets with a program, she is done. She has no future as a Republican in Arizona. And if she sinks this bill, she has no future as a Democrat senator in Arizona either. Joe Manchin, it's a Republican state. They voted for Donald Trump overwhelmingly over Joe Biden. Slightly different dynamic, but Kyrsten Sinema, I got to imagine that when she's having these meetings with these corporate donors.
Yeah, the New York Times reporting it this morning. I can find a little bit more information for everybody.
She's meeting the National Association of Wholesaler Distributors and Grocers, PAC, along with lobbyists for roofers and electoral contractors. A small business group called the S-Corp Political Action Committee. That is Donald Trump, because of his real estate dealings. S-Corp is are entities that are set up by individuals, small business people, but really sort of like you could do it as a doctor, you could do it as a real estate, and it is what is known as a pass-through vehicle, and there is preferential treatment in the tax code after Donald Trump there. That's why that PAC is meeting there. Don't roll back the Donald Trump tax cuts. They meet today for 45 minutes. They write checks for between $1,000 and $5,800 to her. And I imagine she is also handing out her card and maybe looking for
some jobs.
Kind of office space you got there.
Exactly.
And this is after Ryan Grimm was also reporting that No Labels is privately backing Sinema's efforts on the infrastructure bill and her efforts to kill it. So she is a vessel for these corporate interests in a really brazen way that, like, I don't want to say it's Lieberman-esque, but maybe.
Well, Labels is a Joe Lieberman entity.
Yeah, and she seems to be just almost basking in this role and in the attention provided to her in this particular position, because she wields the ultimate power here. And as the representative for those interests, she, I think, feels even more emboldened than someone like Manchin, who, as we say, has a bit of a different project happening.
Meanwhile, part of the problem is that the media has been covering this in a really horrific way.
You don't say.
Here is a clip of noted budget expert on Sunday's Meet the Press. When you think of Republican or conservative noted budget expert, or even budget commentator, do you think of Meghan McCain? Well, somebody at Meet the Press did. Here is Meghan McCain talking about the infrastructure bill. This is not a joke.
Meghan, I want you to play a reporter here for us because you may have the best sense of Kyrsten Sinema. I know you have a pretty good personal relationship. That's the frustration Democrats say is they don't know what Joe Manchin wants. They don't know what his bottom line is, and they don't know what her bottom line is. How would you describe it?
Well, I mean, politically in Arizona, I think that's why people like her so much. Just anecdotally, conservatives in my life really like her because, you know, she's...
Can you pause it? I'm sorry. The opening. I want you to play reporter here. Here's an idea. On Meet the Press, you could have an actual reporter on.
That could happen.
Or sure. She could just opine about her personal relationship with Kyrsten Sinema.
Which I'm sure they get deep into the weeds about. But she says anecdotally her conservative friends. Remember, this is a Democratic senator. Her numbers under the Democratic Party have tanked. And there is no way in a million years that Kyrsten Sinema will win a Republican primary. She could switch over to the Republican Party tomorrow. She could be an incumbent, and she's going to lose that primary. But continue.
Meghan, I want you to play a reporter here for us because you may have the best sense of Kyrsten Sinema. I know you have a pretty good personal relationship. That's the frustration Democrats say is they don't know what Joe Manchin wants. They don't know what his bottom line is, and they don't know what her bottom line is. How would you describe it?
Well, I mean, politically in Arizona, I think that's why people like her so much. Just anecdotally, conservatives in my life really like her because, you know, she's holding the line for conservatives in a lot of ways. The question I always have is, you know, for people like Joe Manchin, if it's not him, it's going to be a Republican. So this distaste and this, you know, outward hostility towards moderates in the Democratic Party surprises me. I also was shocked by seeing
some of the people talking
about sort of.
But I'm not sure if she's aware of how her father was treated by the Republican Party up in the months up to his death. This is a former presidential candidate who was basically used as a step ladder for their most recent president, who now controls that party.
Who
does anybody else remember
imprisonment and I says, like "I like war. Prisoners who aren't captured." Or
I
whatever.
Like my war heroes who are not captured.
Yeah,
but it's shocking to see hostility towards Joe Manchin. Continue.
distaste and this, you know, outward hostility towards moderates in the Democratic Party surprises me. I also was shocked by seeing Senator Booker talking about sort of openly this distrust between progressives and moderates. How the Democratic Party ultimately threads the needle, I don't know. But I will say that President Biden ran on being a moderate, as you said. He ran and won with the help of independent centrists, you know, Trump-wary Republicans, and he is not governing as one. The Build Back Better agenda is the most progressive modern agenda of all time, up to $5 trillion, and it's not polling well. So I think I'm just confused as why they're doubling down on something that is cratering in the polls right now.
You know, Eddie, I'm just curious.
Okay, now, what she just said there was a complete lie. A complete lie. Joe Biden ran exactly on this program. In fact, I think the one that he ran on was slightly bigger. It, in fact, polls very well in battleground states. Here, in fact, is a summary of what Meghan McCain just lied about. It is a tweet from Meet the Press. Pop this up. And this is problematic. You know, it's one thing to have Meghan McCain on your panel show and not give anybody an opportunity to say, like, hey, you're lying, and you didn't do any reporting on Kristen Sinema. You just said that you have conservative friends who like her.
Well, she's playing reporter to give her
I understand, but she didn't even pretend to give a report about that.
Just anecdotally, her rich conservative friends that she grew up around, her senator and presidential candidate father, like Kristen Sinema. I am enlightened. Thank you.
But it's also,
I met the press.
Talked about Joe Manchin, and she doesn't know anybody who knows Joe Manchin. Meet the Press tweeted out, Biden ran and won with the help of independent centrists. The Build Back Better agenda is the most progressive modern agenda of all time, up to $5 trillion, and it's not polling well. The fact is, it is polling well. Put up, do we have a clip of that poll?
So basically, they quoted her without any.
They used her quote for it to basically like launder that talking point.
Yes.
As with an authority, because there's actually no evidence to
with an authority, and that authority being Meghan McCain.
Here are the majority of voters support the provisions of the Democrats in Congress proposed budget. Pretty overwhelming. He explicitly campaigned and won with those things.
On infrastructure, too. I mean, that concept, he was really... infrastructure polls of anything that the Democrats are going to try and pass here, in general, as a topic, very well.
And here's the thing. The bill is not $5 trillion.
Up to.
It is, no.
That's what she said, though.
It's up to, but there is the one thing that we do know. The one thing that we do know is that the resolution that was passed to create the vehicle for the reconciliation says $3.5 trillion is the maximum. The maximum. Now, I get what's a couple million between friends, maybe a couple of billion, maybe a couple hundred billion. But when you're off by $1.5 trillion, somebody should raise their hand and say, hey, you're off by $1.5 trillion.
Particularly when that's all they've been discussing is that number.
Yeah, and then they chose to advertise that figure in that tweet as a way to, as Matt said, launder that point.
And we should say also, this is over the course of 10 years.
Yes.
The military budget that they just approved a military budget that was $25 billion more than the Pentagon had asked for.
So let's frame it like this. $350 billion per year for 10 years on social infrastructure. Do we have a deal?
That is less than a half of what we spend on the military each year. The military over the course of those 10 years is closer to $8 trillion. And the problem is that your casual viewer will watch that and just assume, well, somebody would have said something if it wasn't true, right? Like, people just assume that the people who know what they're talking about will correct the people who don't know what they're talking about. And I don't know why they're laundering Meghan McCain. Like, The View was the high end of her journalistic enterprises over the course of the past 20 years.
You know what I'm fearful of? This is a trial balloon for a show.
Good. Her and Chuck Todd.
I will. Look.
All right.
There's a variety of Republicans who get certain contracts, or if they spoke out against Trump in some way, and that could be what they're trying to do here.
Was pretty stunning. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to try and gather our composure at that last difficult thing that Emma just proposed. We'll be right back after this. So, folks, over the next couple of days, we will get a better sense of whether Pelosi feels that she has the votes to bring this skinny infrastructure bill onto the floor, and whether the progressives vote it down and we go back to the drawing board. We shall see, and then we will talk about it.
That's what we do on this program.
If you're watching us on Peacock, we say goodbye and see you tomorrow. And for those of you sticking around, we got a lot more show going. We got, we're going to be joined by Naomi. Is she here? All right. Just a reminder, you can support this program, help it thrive and survive. I don't know what happened there.
Survive and then thrive.
Yes. Survive and then thrive. By becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free part of the show, but you get the fun half. Check out our Discord, majoritydiscord.com. We got over 4,000 members now. It is free. It's a great and growing community. Also, don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority. You get 10% off. You got fantastic brews over there. So check it out. And Naomi.
Hello.
You've settled. Look at you're now like you're in a new blue, a little purple background.
It looks white. Are you in heaven?
I don't know if you know, I have a hookup there. Yeah. No, it's coming together. I still have to get more stuff and
oh, new design. Right.
I have a new apartment.
Oh, nice.
Finally.
I got to do that soon. I'm dreading it already.
Or does the color go from blue to purple depending on how close Naomi is from the camera?
Well, that's interesting.
I feel like
it does kind of. Or it might be the light. Like, I don't have my blackout curtains in here yet. And so it's kind of a hazy day, if people know in New York. So it might be like the clouds.
Are you sensitive to light? Yeah.
Yep, that's it. It's real fun. It's called aging.
I'm a bad sleeper myself.
Oh, gosh.
I understand.
So we've got a really good week. I think everybody should tune into our show. If I can do some promos. I finally have it up on my phone. Aren't you proud of me for being prepared?
I was going to say, what's going on? Is everything all right?
Well, I'm settled. I'm not running around filming people, you know, in Puerto Rico. So we have Murtaza Hussein, who's going to be on to talk about, actually tomorrow is all about the cost of war. So he's got a great article, over two decades, U.S. global war and terror. has taken nearly 1 million lives and cost $8 trillion. And then Luke Savage is back to talk more about that because, you know, aside from Afghanistan, it's in the war on terror, just militarization in general is $21 trillion since 9/11. So that is the topic tomorrow. And then Jordan Zachar and Napoleon the Legend are going to be on for the panel. So it should be really good.
Awesome.
And nice. Fridays, guys, I just want to do a little promo. We have this thing called Fem Fridays that does really well. And I urge the entire MR audience, you, especially if you're a guy, to tune in. We have really deep and like sometimes tricky conversations about issues that I don't think are necessarily always put out on left YouTube spaces because it's all women and all types of voices from women. And we have debates and, you know, we had a really big one on sex workers that got a lot of attention and opened my mind up to a lot of things. So I definitely recommend it. Go to youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow. Same with Twitch.
No, Twitch
is.tv. I almost got it. Come on.
_NomiKey_show.
Just put it in the search bar. Do it like people do. Search.
All right. Fair enough.
Easier, no?
Yes.
Matt, how do we find something from the Matt Leckian media universe?
Well,
something.
That's an interesting question. But on Wednesday, tomorrow night, you'll be able to find an interview with Adrian Martinez and Sam Goodman of La Ruta del Clima of Costa Rica. And we're going to be talking about a number of things, mainly about how we can use democracy to address climate change. And we'll talk about COP26, also be talking about climate change policy, particular to Costa Rica and Peru. So, check that out Wednesday. I'm very excited about that conversation. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning.
Nice.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Bring back DJ Dinner.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank, okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Africans are black, black, alpha males are black, black Africans are black, black.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.